Hello, iGaming World. This is Stan, your favorite Data Rule podcast host. In today's episode, we're going to talk about data-driven solutions for combating gambling addiction. And today with me, we've got Paula Murphy. Paula, it's welcome and good to see you. Would you like to say a few words about your role at Mandway AI and broadly about your iGaming experience and perspective?
Yeah. Hi, Stan. Thank you for that. And thank you for the invite to join you guys. I'm business development manager from Mindway AI. So at Mindway, we are a specialized technology business who basically bring together machine learning, AI technology, and the understanding of the psychology of problem gambling from a neuroscience perspective to produce a data-driven approach to this equation, basically. So the data role is absolutely the right one for us. In terms of myself, I've been working in the gambling industry for the last 7 years now, and my background is predominantly in safer gambling and compliance. I've been at Mindway for about 18 months, and prior to joining Mindway, I was actually running my own business, an organization called KnowNow, that was specialized around safer gambling and compliance. So again, that was about information, learning, making sure people had the knowledge they needed to succeed in these roles. And prior to that, I was one of the managing directors at the Wilmington Group, which is the parent company of the International Compliance Association. So lots of compliance, but a lot of sort of using information and data in various different ways. As that discipline has progressed over the years, and we've become more and sort of more tech savvy and more able to do sort of really cool, interesting things with it.
Which makes you the perfect speaker for today's episode, where we will be discussing response in gambling and gambling addiction. So I like to start with the basics, as always, definitions and terms, making sure we're on the same page. So if you could tell me, what are the key concepts from your perspective that are related to responsible gaming?
Yeah, of course, absolutely. So obviously, I think today we're going to be focusing a lot on that sort of data-driven approach and how you can use that information to help you identify players that might need your help or players that you might want to be interacting with. But I think what we should probably do is sort of roll it back a little bit and think about what the drivers are for operators when you're thinking about actually rolling out a responsible gaming or a safer gambling strategy. And one of the first things I would say is that 99% of the time, whenever anybody gets in contact with us to talk about this, the main driver is a regulatory one. And it is something that we see again and again and again, where operators have obviously things that they have to achieve because the regulator has asked them to achieve it. Once they then start delving into this, they see that there are other opportunities there. And I think that that's really important from a number of different levels. So I'm hoping today we can delve a little bit into all of those different levels, Stan, and think about, you know, the nature of the law as well as the letter of the law. And by that, I mean, sort of taking this back to this idea of actually, what are we trying to achieve? Why are we putting these strategies in place in the first place? And for me, there's a number of different drivers there that sort of do sit outside of regulation. So first, there's that we're all human beings, right? And we have, I don't want to use the words duty of care, but we have a responsibility, I would say, to one another. And that responsibility is to protect the customers and the players and put the customer at the center of what we're doing and to minimize any harm that people might be actually experiencing. And I would caveat that with 99% or, you know, a very, very large percentage of the customers at any point in time are not the ones that are experiencing harm. We're talking about a very small proportion of our customer databases here. But we don't want anybody to experience in severe levels of harm. So on that very human level, we want to make sure that we're able to identify and prevent that as much as we possibly can. And then the other thing that I think is incredibly interesting is how this impacts the wider business. So thinking about safer gambling as part of your kind of commercial strategy, which I know, again, we will touch on later today. So I think for me, going back to your question, those are the foundations. Regulation is important. Understanding your customer base is important. putting your customer base at the center of what you're doing as a business so that you can maintain a sustainable customer base and keep those relationships with them over a longer period of time. That's super important. So yeah, I think they're the key things that we'll touch on, as well as, you know, doing the right thing.
So how to keep it an enjoyable experience for the players while maintaining a safe and sound environment at the same time, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We're an entertainment industry, and I think it is important that we maintain that and we look after our customers from that perspective. And also, on the flip side of that, protect our businesses as well from, you know, potential harm, be that regulatory action or reputational risk. That is also very important too.
And when we speak about identifying this player addiction, what would you name are the most important symptoms that would indicate that a certain player is becoming addicted? What are this kind of aspects that you see them and you have a red flag in front of your eyes?
Yeah, okay. So that sounds like a very simple question, but it's actually incredibly complex because there is no sort of one pattern that I would say that you look at and that follows to say, okay, that this person is experiencing harm. What we see is that problem gambling manifests in many, many different ways. So you actually need to be able to track it in many, many different ways. So there are, of course, universal sort of identifiers that we would say that is a marker of harm or this one's a marker of harm. And they're normally based around things like time consumption or level of spend. However, on their own, they only take us so far. So there is a big initiative at the moment where, certainly in Europe, we're trying to sort of define a standardized set of markers of harm. And that's a project that's being driven by the European Gaming and Betting Association. So we have this sort of standardization of markers of harm going on. And Mindway is actually taking part in that project as one of the Danish representatives. And I think it's really great that we see that, because I think one of the challenges for operators is when you have players in different jurisdictions and you have to have sort of different strategies across those jurisdictions, it's good to standardize. But I think, as I said earlier, the markers are like the starting point for me. And where this becomes really interesting and important is where you add context. And this is really the only way to do it and to understand. So rather than looking at a very kind of binary approach of, is that behavior there? Yes, no. You start looking into what you see around that behavior and how the different markers interact with one another. So I think a really good example of this is if you take something that most of us would agree is generally viewed as a marker of harm, and that would be excessive nightly play or play during antisocial hours, you know, early hours of the morning. If you take the approach of, is that play there? Yes, no. You're going to get a very different understanding of what's going on with that customer than if you actually look into what you see around that behavior. So I'm going to give you sort of two examples, Stan, and you tell me, are they the same thing? So player number one is somebody who we see long sessions going on throughout the day that run often into nightly sessions. We often see that play is something that there is a lot of deposits that don't look very controlled going on around that play leading into the nighttime. We also see that we often get these big nighttime sessions when somebody has had either a big win or a big loss. And then following that, the play sort of carries on into late night. So that's player number one. Player number two is somebody who we do see nightly play. That flag is also ticked. It's there. But when we actually look into that behavior, we see that nightly play is clustered around a Friday or a Saturday night. We see that the sessions generally start later on. And actually, the behavior is around a sporting activity and betting on a sporting activity that takes place outside of their time zone. Are these players the same?
Not at all.
No, exactly. And that's my point. And that's why context is so important. Because if you're just looking at, is that marker of harm there, nightly play for both of them, the answer is yes. But there is so much more that you have to take into consideration, which is why when we're looking at this, we use the data and the spin level data that we have available to us to assess all of those behavior patterns in relation to one another.
Totally, because this could be, for example, workers of grocery store night shift.
Exactly, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Or the fact that it's clustered, the place clustered around the weekend, it's somebody, you know, legitimately not interrupting their sort of work schedule at all, just it's the behavior that they like to do to let off steam on a Friday night. That, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And I think a really important thing to say about this as well is that we're not here to judge people's behavior or to judge people's choices. That's not what this is about. It's not about player prevention. It's about player protection. So, you know, we should enable our players the freedom to play safely and sustainably as much as we possibly can, but just be there as a safety net to pick up on the ones that actually, when we look at it, the data is telling us this behavior is potentially problematic, and that's why we want to have a conversation with them. But the conversation we want to have about with them is about something that is going to be meaningful to them, because we can talk about the actual behaviors rather than it just being, oh, well, you know, you've deposited over X, or something that they might see as us sort of intruding into their personal freedom, if that makes sense.
So not trying to apply universal rules to everyone just exactly. Because we just said A and B groups, say. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And how would you model the relationship between responsible gaming and marketing, as it all stereotypically, it seems that these are conflicting needs. Marketing drives and is driven by the growth, by the acquisition and retention and increasing the activity of the players, while we could say that responsible gaming aims at limiting the amount of time people spend on the platform, the number of days they connect, and giving a cap to their deposit levels, be it monthly, daily, or weekly. What's your take on this?
Yeah, right. So this is a narrative we hear all the time, isn't it? The push and pull of compliance versus commercial. I'm a very commercial person myself. I've got a commercial background. I'm also somebody who's worked a lot in compliance, and I actually do not buy into this narrative that the two cannot coexist or that the two are sort of in competition with one another. I think that intelligent business people are waking up to the fact that this whole sort of outmoded business model of customer acquisition, bring them in, like let them burn out, then bring more in, is actually not the most sustainable business model. Acquisition costs are incredibly high. And once you have those customers playing with you, you need to be doing everything you can to actually make sure that you keep them playing with you, right? It's not about actually getting somebody to spend thousands of thousands in a week, but then never come back and never play with you again. It's about getting people to gamble for entertainment at a level that is sustainable for them for a lifetime value, and for them to recommend your product and your services to other people that then might be able to come and do the same thing. And I think that actually, once we factor in the sort of cost of acquisition, the reputational cost of not being somebody who isn't looking after their players, the regulatory cost, if you end up with some of the pretty huge fines that we've seen these days, then you start to see a very different picture on what the ROI is on this. You start to see that actually protecting your players and making sure you're looking after them, it is the right thing to do from a business perspective as well. And the other really interesting bit, and this is the bit that I really want to get my teeth into moving forward, and I'm actually very, very interested to speak to any of the listeners who have got views on this as well, is actually when you start to think about sort of traditional marketing segmentation, and then you apply the lens of risk over the top of that, you get a very interesting picture. So I have had customers that when we've started our conversation with them, one of the things that comes out during the conversation is, well, you know what, actually, when somebody reaches a certain level of risk, a certain tier of risk, we have to turn our marketing off. As a business, we'd like to be a little bit more sort of intelligent about how we deal with that. And actually, with that understanding of your player, that individualized personal understanding of your player, you might be able to start taking certain groups who, before you would have said, okay, they've reached a certain level of risk, all marketing has to go off. And you might be able to understand their behavior to the point where you can say, well, actually, this is a player who under no circumstances should we be serving any high volatility products or games to. but actually we could still serve them some sports betting marketing. And specifically when we know what their areas of interest are, we know who their team are, we think about how we normally segment marketing, we can send them stuff that is very personalized to them, and we can see that they can gamble in a controlled manner when that's all they're working on. So let's push them to the right product rather than just saying, okay, all marketing or no marketing. And that way you, again, end up with somebody who has an enjoyable, sustainable experience while they're gambling with you. The other bit around that is thinking about safer gambling messaging and how you interact that in, how you interweave that into your marketing messaging. And I'm not just talking about having Be Gamble Aware at the end of a TV ad. I'm talking about actually understanding, he's laughing at me. If you guys could see him, he's laughing at the minute. But I'm talking about actually understanding. So who is this customer? What is their behavior like? What do they how do they prefer to be communicated to? What kind of messaging and what kind of sort of delivery of that messaging? And then joining the two up so that they get one voice from all of your business. So I just think there's so many really, really cool and interesting things we can do across this whole piece. And what we're talking about here is customer information. We're talking about understanding your customers so that actually you can produce the best customer experience for them. Now that's valuable whether you're thinking about it with a marketing hat, a commercial hat, or a safer gambling hat. And there's no reason why one individual can't be thinking about all of those things at any one time.
All right. I also happen to know that you guys are very much data-driven within Mindway AI. So I'm wondering, how do you actually leverage the data to strengthen the responsible gaming initiatives?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. This is a great question for me because it's absolutely at the heart of what we do. So Mindway is all about data. And a lot of us all the time these days, we all talk about AI constantly. You know, you go to the coffee shop, people talking about AI. Pick your kids up from school, people are talking about AI. You know, it's literally everywhere. But fundamentally, in my view, what we are really talking about with this is taking a data-driven approach. And what we actually do at Mindway is we take the spin level data that is available from the operators that we work with. So by spin level data, I'm talking about every 10-minute session for casino play or betting slip by betting slip for sportsbook. And we look for the behavior patterns that we see within that data. And there's lots of different things that can identify behavior patterns. So we're looking for things like deposits. We're looking at things like time spent. We're looking at like when the person has spent that time. We're looking at what somebody does, how their behavior changes. Does it intensify after a win or after a loss? We're looking at so many, like hundreds of different data points. But from that, you're able to form a picture of this person and how they're gambling. So this is how we utilize the data. We kind of use it to bring the play to life, if that makes sense, to show a paint a picture for us of what's going on with each and every one of those customers. And that then, the raw data information then feeds into our sort of markers or our risk factors, which then enables us to really, really break it down for the operator so that they can see in great detail what is happening with that player on a sort of pure stats basis, and then running down onto a, well, that's what's driving these stats. We're worried about these particular indicators. And then drive down again a level further if you need to into the real nitty gritty of what has happened, like a deposit failed here. Why did that deposit fail? What then happened? Did they bring in another payment method and try that payment method? Like to really understand what's going on with your player. And the way that we use that data to make sense of it is we actually do something that we talk a lot about when we talk about AI, which is we have some humans in the loop. So everybody talks about having humans in the loop, and my view is it's very, very important to do that. So we basically take the spin level data and we show this spin level data to a group of experts who we work with across the industry. And these experts are people that have been psychologists and working in the field of understanding problem gambling for a very, very long time, both from the field of research and from the field of clinical experience. We also build lived experience into the algorithm these days as well. So we have experts with that level of understanding too. And what we do is we get these guys to rate what they see going on within that data based on a scale that we show them. And from that point, because the really important bit around the rating is we also get them to indicate the reasoning for their ratings. From that point, what we're then able to do is take a huge subset of data, like a whole operator database, maybe, you know, millions of players oftentimes, and replicate that expert human decision on scale across that whole player database in real time. So what you effectively end up with is like having an army of psychologists looking at your player data 24/7. But obviously, because it's AI, it's an army that never sleeps. And what we're doing is we're looking for those player patterns. So we're not saying every single person that is flagged that they're definitely a problematic player. You know, one of the questions I get asked probably nearly every single time I start having a conversation with an operator is, what happens if my whole player database is in the high risk field when we run this on my player database? And I think the first thing I would say is that's something I've never, ever seen. And I don't think anyone else within the business has ever seen either. The distribution of risk is normally sort of within the realms of what you would expect from the prevalence studies. But also, I think the really important thing around it is that it's good to know what's happening with your player database, because if you can identify those problematic patterns early on, then you can steer those people back to some sort of safer, sustainable play before they start hitting those high levels that you're worried about.
And this would mean that at the end of the day, perhaps instead of them getting banned, you're actually able to extend their lifespan within the platform.
Yeah, exactly. Which is the end goal, right? What we want is safe, sustainable play. So if we can identify somebody going on that journey early and we can talk to them about that and we can say, hey, think about using these safer gambling tools or think about using these strategies, and we start to see their behavior become less intense, then we're doing our jobs right.
And what are the challenges when it comes to using this data to protect the players?
Ooh, challenges. Okay, I would say probably one of the biggest challenges actually is when people think that, you know, understanding data, being able to build an algorithm is the only important bit within this equation. I think when you don't have the understanding of what it is that you're training that algorithm to look for, you end up in a situation where you've potentially got a detection solution in place, but it's detecting, but it's not detecting the right players. So there's a lot of things that come into this equation. And the data science is just one element of it. So we as a business were built, we were founded by a guy who's a professor of neuroscience. So all of that sort of scientific understanding of problem gambling is then built in. All of the psychology is built in by the expert panel. Then you've got to think about actually doing the job on the ground and the workflows and the day-to-day of what, you know, what pressures being somebody who heads up the player protection team or the safe gambling team within an operator is encountering, and make sure that that's built in. Then you've got to think about the regulatory landscape, right? Because there's no point in having a load of stuff in place if you then are not actually achieving what the regulator needs you to achieve. So you need to have all of this to make it work. And often what we see when we start working with operators that have sort of built in-house systems, thinking that that was the way to go originally, is that they have something that worked to an extent, but that probably isn't fit for purpose on all of those levels. And what you then find is that your team, who you're investing time and energy and training up and making sure that they're able to handle this, are wasting a lot of time sort of chasing players that they don't need to be chasing, speaking to the wrong people, and the people that actually do need your help are falling through the cracks. So I'd say that for me is the biggest worry with this kind of approach is if you don't utilize it properly.
But from what I hear, I also feel that there's a part that resonates very well with me, that it's not always only about getting a specific tool, but also getting it implemented within the processes of a certain organization. Yeah. Because from what I see, often different companies tend to believe that buying a new solution, new product, or new tool would solve the problem for themselves. Sometimes you need to get it solved with you, not only for you.
Yeah, I would agree with you there, Stan. And I think the really important thing is that this is not an out-of-the-box situation. One size definitely doesn't fit all. So if you consider that we have customers across 61 different international regulatory jurisdictions, we have solutions running in 61 different international regulatory jurisdictions, and that customer base spans all different gaming verticals, as well as land-based and online, there's no way one size is going to fit all. You're going to see very, very different gambling behavior in Brazil than you are in Denmark. You are going to see very, very different behavior on a betting exchange than you would on a bingo site, right? So all of that needs to be taken into consideration and built into the algorithm as well. That understanding of what is this product and what does normal look like on that on this product is also something that you need to consider. As well as I said, the cultural differences. And the other big one actually, and becoming more and more important, is actually generational differences. As we have sort of new sort of Gen Z players coming through, we see different drivers for why they want to be involved in gaming. And those different drivers come with different behaviors as well. So understanding that, again, super important.
So what would you name as, from your perspective, what would be the main risks associated with using AI in the context of today's discussion?
Yeah, of course. So I would say the answer to this question is in a lot of ways similar to the answer to the last question around the risks of using AI being not getting the target right, and not understanding what you're looking for, and ending up in a situation where you're targeting the wrong players and you're speaking to the wrong players. But that said, I think the benefits of using AI far outweigh any risks associated with that. I think there is no feasible way that you could track the kind of volume of players that we have to track on scale without utilizing technology. And I think what the AI or machine learning enables us to do is do that in a much, much more sort of intelligent way than we would if we were just relying on sort of flagging thresholds. So, I mean, my advice here would be for people to sort of look at it and do it and not to be afraid of it. We said earlier, didn't we, that there's a lot of talk about AI. You can't go out your house without getting into a conversation with somebody about the dangers of AI. But actually, I think it's something that we should be embracing. I think AI is a lot of things, and a lot of those kind of dangers of AI that people talk about in the mass media, not really relevant here, because what we're talking about, tools that enable you to be better at your job, that give you the information you need to be more informed, make better decisions, and protect your players because you're more informed and you're able to make better decisions. So I kind of think of it as like the AI is doing the heavy lifting, and then you still have the human that is going to inform what then happens after that.
Okay, and when we think about the future, because I always like to think about the future, what do you think will happen in the next few years when it comes to different trends and innovations that might shape the responsible gaming as we know it today?
Yeah, cool. Love this question, because it's like, get your crystal ball out and let's see where we're going. So I think from talking to the vast amount of operators that I do talk to, that what we will start to see is people taking a more holistic approach that we already touched upon when we were talking about marketing. I think we will see people joining up the different divisions of their business and using the data and the information that is available to them to sort of make strategic decisions across the whole of business, rather than siloing it into different departments and different sort of solutions for those departments. So I think what we will then lead to is a much more customer-centric approach that treats every single customer as what we all are, the beautiful individuals that we are. It talks to Stan in one way because we know this is how Stan likes to be talked to, but it talks to Paula in another way because we know she's going to respond to that better. So I think, I absolutely think that's where we're going. I think we will see more and more automation as we move forward. I think we will see the data driving the communication strategy. And I think we'll start to see things like we know, for example, that those younger generations that we were just talking about, Gen Z, they respond better to actually talking to a chatbot than they do to talking to a human being. Whereas the likes of me, older generations, I would much rather somebody got on the phone and had a chat with me. So I think we'll start to see more of this, and we'll start to see not just personalization in the messaging, but also personalization in the method of delivery, which I think is super exciting. Definitely.
All right. Very nice. And a final one from my side. You have mentioned that you guys are working in many different verticals and many different countries and continents. So now my question would be, how do you measure the success of the responsible gaming programs? What are the metrics that should be looked at?
So we've done quite a nice story out here, Stan, because we started off with framing what responsible gaming is. And now we're winding up with talking about how we measure our success. Again, my answer is going to be data-driven approach. I'm sorry, I don't want to bore the listeners, but I think, you know, we have the analytics that shows us what is going on and how successful our efforts have been. So when you take something like GameScanner and you look at the analytics on the dashboard, you can very clearly, very quickly, very easily see what is the direction of travel. Is our overall customer base getting more sort of sustainable and into the green area, or is the red area that suggests that there is a bit of a problem growing? Straight away, you can see sort of on a sort of company-wide basis what's going on. You can filter that. You can use all sorts of different metrics to then sort of look at different groups. So if you want to say, show me all of the young players who were previously in a high-risk category but have been sent this intervention, what's happened with them? You can see at the click of a button, okay, what's happening with them? Where are we going? Is it working? Are they getting, is their risk profile moving up and up or down? And I think one of the other really interesting innovations that we've seen recently, and it came from working with the UK market. So as we know, the Gambling Commission in the UK sort of issued this guidance around identifying problematic play, acting on it, and then evaluating it. And one of the things that our customers were saying is that the hardest bit of that piece is the evaluation and specifically evidencing why you've made that evaluation. So what we actually did is we developed some functionality that looks at short-term risk rather than looking at long-term risk. So if you imagine you can put a marker in that an interaction has happened, we've spoken to this customer on this day, and this was the nature of that interaction. You can then track in the days immediately following that interaction what has happened with that customer's play. So if you start to see a much more controlled style of play following the interaction, and it's but that controlled play has been 1 or 2 days, it's obviously not enough consistency to impact their overall risk score in any material way. But what it can do is inform you as an operator that actually that conversation that this operative had with that player seems to be working, because we've seen control in these different areas. So what is our next step now we're seeing the control? Maybe we watch and wait. Maybe we send them a follow-up. Maybe we give them another call, letting them know that we've noticed that we've seen that control. You know, or on the flip side of that, we're seeing an interaction strategy that isn't working because we're actually seeing the behavior continuing to escalate. Well, what's our next step now? Do we talk to them about something else? So we're able to evaluate by having really, really informed conversations about what is happening with those customers, and then seeing the data, we can see it. We can see whether it's working or not.
Perfect. So I guess that we're slowly approaching the end of this episode. So thanks a lot, Paula, very insightful discussion. Today, we've talked about data-driven solutions for combating gambling addiction with Paula Murphy. We covered various aspects related to legal, trade-off or lack of trade-off between responsible gaming and marketing and future developments. That's gonna be it for now. This was Stan. Thanks a lot for listening. Remember, no more bets and keep rolling with the data.